Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Love the Superfly music. Oddly, this is the music that I play on my iPhone when I walk down Michigan Avenue.
Get out.
Because I like to have theme music when I'm walking down the street.
And when people say, aren't you Dean Richards?
Right. The man of the and I tip my gigantic brim that I'm wearing, as we used to call them back in the day.
The fedoras?
Yeah, well, no, it's more like a pimp hat.
Yeah.
Really? Is it okay to say that? Is it okay to say pimp hat? I think so. And my platform shoes. People see me on TV and I look one way. You see me off the air, I am 100% Huggy Bear on Starsky and Hutch.
The pink platforms are cool, by the way.
Those are the good ones. And I like also the ones that's got the goldfish in the heel.
Oh, yeah.
Those are good ones. Those are fly, as we say, back in the day. How are you today, Andrea?
I'm good. How about yourself? This weather's going to be a little crazy this morning.
It's going to be a little crazy, and I have to catch a plane today, so...
Oh, I bet I would check on that.
We got to...
I would call ahead on that one.
Allegedly catching a plane today, so we'll see about that.
Now, we're glad you're here. We get to talk to you one today, but it's what? It's a quickie hit. We never get to see you.
Oh, you'll be so sick of me by about 7:30 today. You're praying for Steve to come back around 7:20 this morning. I promise that. We have A-lister John Krasinski, who's going to be on the show today. You know him as Jim from The Office. He's got a fantastic new movie that's coming out called The Hollers. It's like a family, dysfunctional family, which I'm in right there.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you put a family weirder than my own family on small or big screen, I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a really good movie that he directs, his directorial debut. That's like, what, around 7:30-ish, something like that, right after the 7:30 news.
He's married to Emily Blunt, right?
He is.
Okay.
He is.
Does he talk about her at all?
We actually talked about his kids.
Oh.
I've been a little obsessed with, we talked to John Legend on the show last week. He's got a brand new baby.
Yeah, he's married to Christy Teigen.
Right.
Is that right? Yeah.
Right, right. And it's so interesting. I think it's so interesting talking to these guys whose lives are completely turned upside down now that they're dads. And both of these guys seemingly like really great dads,
mm-hmm.
too. A lot of dads are like, oh, I can't. They're changing diapers and bothered with the baby. These guys love being dads.
And they're hands-on.
And they're very hands-on. So we'll talk with John Krasinski coming up later on. Tim Meadows is going to be on the show today. We've got a lot of things. Earthquakes in Italy, and now the story of the earthquake in Burma that's just happened.
Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
Keep you posted on all of that. A lot of Donald Trump stuff going on yesterday. But listen anyway. We'll, talk about coming up on a little while. And Cubs, a good day for the Cubs yesterday.
Really good day.
Dave. And Jake Arrieta is going through... What would we call that, a little slump that he was going?
He didn't win a game in July, and now he has won all of his starts in August, which is, I think if you want a particular order to how you're going to win, you want to win late. He's pitching well. He wanted to finish the game last night. Joe Maddon took him out after 8 innings because he wants Arrieta strong in October. So, and Arrieta understands that, I think, because... he kind of ran out of steam there in October last year.
Yeah. All right, so
but it's nice to talk about October.
I can't even begin to tell you. Like I mentioned before, I'm almost even hesitant talking about anything.
I know.
That's how I'm like an abused child or something. I'm afraid to say everything's going to be okay.
No, I know. Eddie Vedder sang the Pearl Jam. Sandberg was at the Pearl Jam concert. Yeah. He sang the Someday We'll Go All the Way. And there was a part of me that went, oh, please don't sing it. Just don't do it. Please.
You're going to jinx it. That's how.
And I heard the World Series could actually go into November. Is that true?
The last game would be November 2nd.
Yeah,
right?
But that's not new. It's been that way for a few years.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
But
that'll be comfortable.
Yeah.
Ooh, get that lakefront breeze.
Well, Game 7 would not be in Chicago. It would be in the American
Just
League
wear,
City.
You wear the same clothes that you wear on opening day when it's 20 degrees.
I don't know, a Bears game.
Right.
But you know what, though? It would be okay. If we're sitting at Wrigley, well, it wouldn't be.
Yeah, you're going to really complain.
No,
I better stop. You're going to jinx it.
I'll be in my parka.
Change the subject.
Sorry, Dean.
Jinx it.
Dean, you look good.
Okay. She said change the subject. Don't be ridiculous. There's a big benefit that's going on that is benefiting veterans and a very important issue facing them. It's 6:19. This is Dean Richards in for Steve Cochran this morning, 720 WGN. The problem of veteran suicide is one that doesn't get enough attention, really, if you're asking me about this. There's an alarming number of suicides by our veterans who often come back from service in a damaged mental state that will sometimes lead to this condition. I wanted to talk about this. I know it's not the most cheery of subjects to start your day with, but it's an important one, and one that is represented by an organization called Mission 22. Magnus Johnson and Mike Kissel are the founders of the organization. Kissel or Kissel? Did I get it right the first time, Mike?
Kissel.
Kissel is correct. All right. Well, thanks for joining us, guys. There's a big event that's going on to benefit your organization, which we'll talk about in a second. But just explain, you know, how serious and how prevalent this problem actually is.
I think it's a cultural epidemic. You know, it's the suicide rate's been happening for a few years, and it's just now starting to get the attention that it needs. You know, and you talk about, you know, a lot of guys come back damaged and struggling, you know, with the time after war. That's true. But I also think America's struggling, you know. Some of our finest folks, you know, suffering through an epidemic like that, and it's not on the front page of the paper. It's not the forefront. You know, what's that say about us? What's that say about what's important to us? So I look at it as not just a veterans problem, but an American problem.
It is. But don't you think it's kind of magnified for veterans? Don't you think coming back?
Absolutely.
To a society where they're struggling to fit back into society, they may be struggling with you know, getting a job, what's going on with their family, there, you know, maybe feelings of guilt for leaving their families while they went to serve. What are some of the things that you think might make veterans a little more prone to that?
Well, you got to look at, you know, the major causes of depression, you know, moving, a death in the family. You know, guys go downrange, they deploy, they actually, you know, the love and camaraderie that you get from being a part of such a close-knit team and having such a valuable purpose, you know, not only is the war over, but then your family, your purpose, your mission, what makes sense is over. And then you transition back to a peaceful community that you can't really necessarily relate to or interact with. They don't understand you, you don't understand them. And that's called transition period. And I think that's one of the most dangerous times.
Yeah. And so how did you start this organization, Mike?
Well, initially we started out, you know, with the idea of how to affect this culture that we're seeing, you know, whether it's the civilian side or the military side. And initially what we came up with is, you know, large public projects that are positive and influential in communities. So really, that was really our jumping off point. And it's grown, you know, since that. And the main point of that was to raise awareness. But since we've got that awareness, we've been able to move on to actually providing, you know, some treatments, you know, state-of-the-art stuff that we found really helps for kind of like the maintenance period, you know, getting through the transition.
Yeah, I would think just the fact that you have this organization and, you know, that you're involved in doing things has to be very comforting to somebody who, you know, may be a candidate for being part of your group, just in knowing that other people have or are going through what they're going through.
You know, suffering alone is sometimes just as painful as suffering. You know, once you find out you're not the only one, once there's light shed on a subject like this, it takes away some of that darkness and the blackness. And it, you know, once there's light on the issue, then people can do something. You know, then government, states, just like doing this radio show, you know, now we have opportunities to shed more light. We just got to crack the door and it'll be fixed.
Yeah. And things, we're talking off the air a little bit, and you're telling me, you know, that statistics are changing and things are getting a little better. I mean, there is, you know, the problem's not fixed, but the problem certainly is becoming better these days, right?
Well, the best study that can be done with people that have the most information done by the VA, you know, is at 20 a day. A few years ago, it was 22 a day.
20 veteran suicides a day.
Correct. That's, and they don't have access to all the information.
It's startling.
You know, they don't. That's only counting the veterans that are involved in the VA system. A lot of guys aren't. A lot of men and women aren't.
Yeah.
So it's still not a complete accurate presentation.
Yeah. So what are the kinds of things, services that your organization provides? What are the kinds of things that you do?
We provide, we're going to do, it's called hyperbaric chambers, where they help with TBI. You go into this pressure tank and it starts to alleviate some of the pressures from traumatic brain injury. Endobiogeny is kind of a holistic, whole person approach to their endocrine systems, their hormone systems, minerals, vitamins, drug and alcohol. We've partnered with a company called Warriors Heart. They provide rehab for first responders, police officers, and veterans. So it's not just one size fits all. Some folks will need psychology. Some folks will need exercise, diet. Some folks are going to be addicted. We have to create a pipeline where, as they come out, where they are in their search for healing, we have to provide those resources at the correct time for the correct people. You can't just take one pill or do one thing. You might need several different resources.
Yeah, and great that you're sort of customizing this, right?
It's got to be.
For each individual person, because everybody is reacting and dealing in a different way.
Correct.
Good for you for starting this and keeping it running. And you've got this big event that's coming up at Cog Hill tomorrow, right?
That's right.
Tell us about that.
So it's put on by Fresh Time, which has been, you know, one of our biggest supporters. And they did something similar for us last year. And the cool thing about Fresh Time is, you know, they believe similar to us, like they believe in change. They believe that they can affect the world. And that's why it's such a great fit for us. And, you know, with these treatments, they're really helping us with that. And they're really affecting people's lives, you know, and saving people's lives. So that is the, you know, kind of tone of the event
and the object of it. The event itself is a golf tournament, right?
That's right.
Yeah, at Cog Hill. And can people still get involved, still sign up, just still be part of it all?
I guess it's full.
It's full. Okay. Well, good. Right. We did that in just a few minutes like that. That is the power of WGN right there. Well, that's great. It's great to know that it is at capacity right now. But great to learn about your organization. And, you know, you've got to be incredibly grateful to Fresh Thyme Farmers Market for all of their support. The event is Cog Hill Country Club. The organization is called Mission 22. People want to get more information about your group. What's the best way to do that?
Mission 22 Facebook or mission22.com.
All right.
Magnus at Mission 22. Email us, write us. We'll get back to you. We'll get back to you quick.
Okay. And we'll put a link up on WGNradio.com as well to make sure everybody can get that information. That's Magnus Johnson, Mike Kissel, founders of Mission 22. Guys, congratulations on the great work with your organization. Thanks for coming in this morning. It's great to meet you both.
Thanks for having us.
My honor. 627 WGN.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Steve Cochran Show. Your pal, Uncle Dean, in with you this morning. Where is Steve today? Do we know? Do we know exactly
can
where Steve
is? Say where he is?
Nah, he's on a mission.
Oh, from God? Like why
I think it's classified.
I have to get Perry Mason on this case.
I think it might involve a little bit of golf.
That's what I was thinking, too.
But keep that on the down low.
That's what I was thinking.
Just like the ball.
As well. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to be attempting to sync up with WGN Television.
Oh.
And we here will be on WGN Television and vice versa.
Okay, cool. Is it weird being here
yeah.
and not there? Do you miss like Annabelle Ball? Do you need me to yell and be cute?
It's quieter. It's much quieter.
Cute and loud.
It is much quieter.
Dean! What's wrong with you? Dean!
So we'll see how that works out. It's always it can be a train wreck syncing up the two WGNs at the same time.
No.
But we continue here in the meantime, and what a pleasure always. I do not get to talk with Karen Conti enough. She joins us on the telephone line. Hello there, my friend.
Hello, Dean. How are you? Well, you know what? You just need some more legal problems. If you had some more legal problems, then we would talk more.
Don't even get me started on legal problems. It's always nice to have you here with us. And some of the things that we wanted to just get your opinions on going on include the Rob Blagojevich case. I guess we're going in for another round of this now with the former and very white-haired former governor.
Well, that's right. And
I'm fascinated by how much he looks like Colonel Sanders now, by the way.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, they don't have good hair dye in prison, apparently. But, yeah, you know, the judge refused to reduce his sentence, as you know, and that was a couple weeks ago. And his lawyer has now gone back to the federal appellate court asking again for a reduction in sentence, which is really just a matter of form because they're not going to do it. They're not going to reduce it. They've already said that it's not an unlawful sentence and that it's fair. And even though he did have some of his counts stricken, that the 14-year sentence was appropriate. So his only real avenue would be the Supreme Court, and then that ends it.
But with the decisions that have already happened so far, I mean, isn't that kind of spinning their wheels? I mean, I guess if I was him and I had my defense attorney, I would want to try everything over and over and over, even if it didn't seem like it was ever going to happen. But it just seems kind of futile, doesn't it?
No, it does. But when you're a criminal defense lawyer, that's kind of what you do. There's a lot of futility in what you do. And you try to make points and you try to, you know, have a new avenue and a new argument and maybe sometimes a new court where you have judges who might be receptive to a different argument. But, you know, this is what you do. 14 years is a long time. And I don't think they're going to stop until they're all the way, you know, done and exhausted and maybe even ask for a pardon from Obama, which might be his best tactic here.
Do you think that would really happen? I just cannot see President Obama wanting to get involved in any of this mess in his home state, and especially something that really kind of started with his election to the presidency.
I completely agree with you, but there are a lot of people that have theories that he was involved and that, you know, you've heard all those theories. I agree with you, Dean. I just don't see from a political standpoint, what would he gain by doing that? Unless he had some just high thought that, you know, this is crazy. It's too many years. We want to put an end to it. If I'm a betting person, I'm betting no.
Karen, James Zagel, the judge, very tough judge, who sentenced him the first time to the 14 years, it went back to him for this resentencing. He said, no, it's going to stay at 14. Is there any chance that they could get another judge, or are they stuck with Zagel every time this is going to go back, if it does, in fact, go back again?
Yes, it's always going to go back to Judge Zagel. And, you know, because you don't want to have a situation where you have a different judge have a different view of this, because any judge in that courthouse could have had a different view easily. You know, it could have been a 6-year sentence. It could have been a 3-year sentence. No, it's going to go back to Judge Zagel. And even if Judge Zagel retires and we have another judge, that judge is probably going to uphold Zagel's sentence just because we don't do judge shopping and we're not going to change it. I mean, it's pretty much etched in stone here.
Another story that's been making headlines is a possible defamation suit filed against some tabloid publications. I even hesitate to call them newspapers because they're really way more tabloidy than they are newspapers. But stories about Melania Trump, the stories alleging that she may have been an escort in a past life. And she has said, there could be lawsuits that'll follow. Talk to us about that process of possible defamation. And I suppose it depends on the sources that these tabloids have used to publish that story.
Right. That it all goes back to, did you have a reasonable belief that this was true? I mean, defamation cases are very difficult in this country because we have the presumption that we have freedom of speech and we can say basically what we want as long as it's not false and it's not damaging and you didn't have any basis at all. She's going to have to prove that there was no basis at all for, I think it was the Daily Mail, to publish the account that she may have been an escort. And, you know, they probably have sources. They probably have sources that say that the modeling agency she worked for back in Europe was also doing escort work. And they probably have a basis for saying that, which is going to trump, no pun intended, the lawsuit. So
I think there was a little pun intended. I think a little bit was intended there. Your Honor, objection. believe there was some pun intended. But
yeah, when you're kissed, if you get when you're kissed, you at least have to make them laugh. So.
Exactly right. Karen, we always enjoy talking with you. We will listen for you on Sunday night here on WGN. Have a great day today.
Okay, you too, Dean.
Thanks very much for joining us. There's legal analyst Karen Conti joining us. Quick check of the latest traffic, and then we attempt our hookup with WGN Television. I would suggest if you're driving right now to put your seatbelts on. It could get messy. It's all coming up in just a minute. I got to say, you make cucumbers sound appealing.
Right? How about that? And apples with crispy cinnamon, nutmeg.
That does sound good.
They're tasty.
Do they have any kale products in their
They do have a nice
repertoire.
Kale salad and quinoa. They have all kinds of healthy,
I
delicious
would
hope.
Meals.
Dave tried to eat my kale a couple times.
Now, are you not a fan of kale also?
I don't mind kale.
I love kale.
I won't have
I'm
it every
Dave.
Day.
I'm 100% with
Thank
Dave.
You, Dean.
I don't know how somebody does not like kale.
I like a nice kale salad, but I like the kale prepared, how they say, massaged, you know, with oil and lemon. And I knew you were going to laugh at me.
Well,
that's a term, right?
Well, you made it sound dirty. So.
I like a little oil and vinaigrette and salt and pepper on my kale. I can't just eat it plain.
Cooked? Do you ever have it?
Cooked is not bad with the lemon and the olive oil.
I love a steamed kale, but yeah. I almost always now mix it into a regular green salad.
Do you? It's, mm-hmm. It is.
I like the texture. I like the taste. I like everything.
It's
about
crunchy.
It.
I'm not as a
finally
anti-kale.
Somebody else on this show.
We're going to dedicate the last 2 hours to that
kale.
Today. Yeah, we are talking about kale because we've been waiting for you guys. That's why.
Lord.
That's my go-to conversation.
You want to hear my insight on quinoa?
Well, you, above all people, Mr. Healthy Eating there, Larry Potash and Robin Baumgarten at the WGN TV Morning News. I see you guys are covering all the serious stories of the day, the earthquakes that are going on. What are some of the fun things that you guys are doing this morning?
Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is coming on tomorrow on the show, and we found this clip of him. Everybody knows the clip from Airplane, but I found a clip of him on Mannix or something like that.
Oh,
it's just awful, but it's so awful that hopefully it'll be worth watching.
And why are you doing the radio today, Dean?
They asked me to fill in today.
And, we love him.
And our Andre Darlis is here. And,
hey, Andrea.
And
good to see you guys.
And Dave Bennett
guys.
Also. They asked me to fill in, and our news director, Jennifer Lyons, thought it would be fantastic if I did 7 or 8 jobs today instead of the usual 6 or 7. So, there. Yeah, here's Andrea. Okay.
More I've got, kale talk.
That's what I use when I need to kill time. They said, we'll beat to them in 10 seconds, and it was like 2 minutes, so I'm just pulling out anything I have. I do have some entertainment stories for you this morning, and that includes Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence has been named the highest-paid actress of the year again by Forbes magazine. She made $46 million last year. Forbes said that Lawrence grabbed a big chunk of the box office gross from the last 2 Hunger Games movies. Chicago's own Melissa McCarthy, the pride of Plainfield, as we like to call her, at number 2 with $33 million. Amazon is developing a new TV show based on the movie The Departed. It's going to be an hour-long drama centered on young police officers who go undercover to infiltrate a ruthless Latino gang. Meanwhile, the gang has its own spy in the police department. The show is going to be set in Chicago. And John Legend, we talked to last week on the program, is developing a new TV series for our own national cable channel, WGN America. He's already the executive producer of the show, The Underground. This new series will be called Black Wall Street, and he is developing the series that will be set in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the beginning of the 20th century. The series will follow the black middle class that built the community there. If it's picked up, Black Wall Street is expected to air in 2018. And we've been telling you about the movie South Side with You. It made its premiere here in Chicago last week. It'll open officially on Friday. The story of a young Barack Obama and his very first date with then Michelle Robinson. Parker Sawyers and Tika Sumpner star in the series. They recently talked with me last week in Chicago about doing the Obama voices.
It was more like a very deep, older Obama.
Do you fall into it sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I think he's a little bit.
Yeah.
To shake Michelle off into the...
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, Michelle also has a very distinctive speech, like the way she talks.
Right.
And Richard also wanted me to, you know, we got a dialect coach for me. And, you know, I didn't want to do a, like, heavy... imitation
like
or any
cartoon, right?
Yeah, I didn't want it to be a caricature. I wanted it to, you heard Michelle the way it's kind of like a song.
Although I would think that would come in handy if you're at a McDonald's drive thru or something. Speaking of doing your Barack, ordering a quarter pounder or something.
You got a Big Mac and a side of fries. You still have milkshakes? Actually, I don't like ice cream.
Movie is called Southside with You, and I'll have my review for you on that coming up on Friday. And guys, here on the radio, later on, we're going to be talking with John Krasinski, talking about his brand new movie. Also, comedian Tim Meadows joining us here in a little while. And guys, Larry and Robin, I hope to be able to get to each and every one of the Greens families in just a little while. We'll check in with you guys again later on.
I'm sorry, I nodded off there for a minute.
Did you talk about
sale again? Thanks, Dean. Hey, Paul.
Hey, today look for appearance of show.
All right, so there's Larry and Robin, and we are going to update our own news for you. A lot going on overnight. Top of the headlines, earthquakes in Italy and in Burma, and we'll check in on all of that. Coming up next on WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
Where we are minus one Steve Cochran today, but plus me, Dean Richards, filling in for Steve today. A-list interviews today. John Krasinski, he was on Stephen Colbert. Or wait, no, Conan. He was on Conan O'Brien last night. John Krasinski, of course, we talked with him first. We're going to share that conversation with John coming up a little bit later on in the hour. Comedian Tim Meadows. Later, we are going to hook up with some of the spots where the earthquakes have taken place and follow up on those stories. I'm sure we've got listeners with family, relatives, but you know, a lot of people who have traveled. You've been to Italy, you've been to Rome, you've been to Burma, some of the areas that are affected. Probably interested in some follow-up on that. The video footage on this is unbelievable of the two earthquakes that took place last night, so we'll get into that coming up in just a little while. Wanted to talk about something going on right here in Chicago next. I first became aware of Liz Dozier on the CNN documentaries about Chicagoland, this young, determined, brilliant, charismatic principal of Fenger High School in the Roseland area, are, you know, arguably one of the more challenging areas in the city of Chicago, to be a Chicago public school principal that was doing remarkable things with kids and facing amazing values. Liz stepped down last summer to become the managing director of an organization called Chicago Beyond. I cannot tell you how nice it is to meet you in person.
It's so great to meet you, too. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for coming in. Talk a little bit about what Chicago Beyond is, because you've got some pretty cool things that are you're working on and that are coming up.
So I think we were originally cast as a foundation, but I really see us more as like philanthropic venture capital. And so we are investing in programs and in ideas run by those programs that ultimately impact two areas that we feel are flip sides of the same coin. So one is educational attainment. So getting more of our young people here in Chicago, not only just across the high school graduation stage, right, but ultimately across the post-secondary stage, whether that be a two-year, you know, degree or ultimate a college degree. And the other side of that coin is really around safety, and it's around reducing youth violence really here in the city of Chicago. And so our investments really focus and hone in on those two areas.
Do you see this, your mission with Chicago Beyond as being one where for whatever reason, the system is failing the kids, and you're able to do things with this organization that you weren't able to do as a high school principal, or the system is able to do because it's so layered and so structured, and you know, we know financially strapped.
Yeah, I think the exciting part here is that there is not a lack of potential within our cities. There are phenomenal organizations. We had over 200 apply to support essentially this challenge that we originally had, and they wanted to do this type of work. So there's not a lack of potential or promise within the organizations here in this city, but there is a lack oftentimes of funding to carry through with these ideas and these programs to support our young people in those two areas. And so I feel so fortunate to be able to lead Chicago Beyond and to be able to have a way in which to support these folks. I think the other exciting piece is that these aren't grants, right? These are fundamentally investments. These are, you know, larger dollar amounts over multiple years, coupled with, which I think is the most exciting thing, coupled with a research study through the University of Chicago. And so the University of Chicago is our strategic partner, and they're essentially testing what works and what doesn't work. So at the end of this investment, we're not just, we've invested, then we're one and done, right? It's really about how do we know what works and then really helping to spur other philanthropic and public dollars to what we know works. And yeah, we don't usually have that.
I want to talk about more about that in a quick second here. Let's go. I like that show. I hear they have a very handsome entertainment reporter on that show.
I hear there is. What's his name?
No idea. I don't know. I just know I love him. For some reason, I just love him. I don't know exactly. Liz Dozier is here, the managing director of Chicago Beyond, former principal of Fenger High School in Chicago, talking about the $2 million challenge for the organization. Talk to us, Liz, a little bit specifically about that.
So we launched our challenge in April, and it was with the goal being to really have impact. And so in two areas, educational attainment, but also somehow addressing the 45,000 young people here in the city of Chicago who are not working and not in school between the ages of 16 to 24. So we now have three winners, three organizations. So Genesis Works, that deals with young people who are seniors in high school, offering them internships downtown here in Chicago in IT and in accounting, as well as Dovetail, that deals with young fathers, getting them on a career path, as well as Story Catchers, that really supports young people who are incarcerated and then follows them after their incarceration to make sure they're not getting back on that same track through like jobs and careers and supportive services.
You know what's cool about these programs too is that they're not only education based but community oriented as mm-hmm. well. You know, it's getting jobs and learning different skills and interacting with just people in the community, adults too, that one-on-one, which is great.
Well, that's the key, isn't it? Of, you know, providing opportunities. I mean, getting people off the street. As my mother always used to say, idle mind is the devil's workshop. To give the kids, young adults, some place to go, something to do, and some hope and opportunity that there is something better for them out there, right?
I think that's right, Dean. I mean, I think that's all we can do, right? I mean, at the end of the day, like, if we don't provide a pathway to exactly what you're saying, like, they're just idle. They're just out there. They're those part of the 45,000, and they're not going to do anything. And when we talk about, you know, reduction in crime, we talk about, like, long-term outcomes for our city, we really have to address these young people with some type of productive path.
You must be constantly frustrated, as we all are, with the figures and the statistics that we hear about violence every single weekend, of shootings and murders that take place. You must have a unique perspective on this, having dealt with it so long in your role as the former principal of Fenger High School. Where do we begin to solve this? I mean, it seems like such a big and broad question, but what can be done that's not being done? It's perplexing everybody.
Well, I think, like, along with, you know, a lot of Chicagoans, like, we're just so we're so tired of the violence, because we realize that these ultimately are our neighbors, right? These are fellow Chicagoans who are literally living in war zones. And I think everybody's path will be different in terms of the solution, but it's like a big table. It's a big problem. There's a big table, a seat to that table to solve it. For us at Chicago Beyond, it's what we're doing. We feel it's to provide resources and access to these organizations who are ultimately on the ground and supporting young people in productive ways.
Is it more police that we need to solve this problem? Is it breaking the code of silence. That seems to have been the rally cry from the community for the past week or so, of getting people in the neighborhoods to stop being quiet about who are committing these crimes and making them accountable for their actions, instead of just saying we need to stop the violence, but nothing's happening.
I think we have to look at the play for the long game, and the long game is really about getting to the root of what causes communities to be in the situations that they're in, right? And so when we think about what's happening in our education systems, as a principal, I had ninth graders coming into my school reading at a third grade reading level or below, some non-readers, right? Where is that child going ultimately? I'll tell you exactly where he's going. He's going right to Cook County Jail, right? Ultimately, like, you can't read and you're, you know, 17 years old. So we have to look at our education system. We have to look at the economic development. What's happening in these communities in terms of opportunities for jobs, opportunities for, like, what do people see when they walk outside of their door? And so I think it's multifaceted. I think it's easy to look at, you know, one organization or one person and say that's the problem. But I think we sell ourselves short. We're not looking at the multifaceted nature of the root of the issue. And that's the only way we're ever going to solve it. It's not going to be solved, and there's no one solution. It's like someone told me the other day, well, what are you going to do to solve this? I'm like, well, Chicago Beyond's not trying to hit a home run, right? Because there is no one home run for the solution. It's really about a bunch of singles, right? So we invest in the Dovetail Project. That's one single. We invest in, you know, Story Catchers and Genesis Works and these different things, and they add up to creating a difference by getting at that root.
Little by little.
Yeah.
And what you did, too, and what we saw you do, too, not only in Chicagoland, but literally on the streets of Chicago, respect and attention. I mean, you had no fear going out into the street and saying, get in class, get to school, you know, and I think you showed everybody that everyone deserves a lot of respect and a little bit more of attention.
Yeah, because they're kids. I mean, at the end of the day, I think sometimes we use terms, we call people gangbangers and we call them this, that, and the other thing, but I guarantee you, like, and I know from my own experience over the last probably, you know, dozen years or so, like, the kids that we're talking about and referring to are no different than the kids like our listeners have at home. They have extraordinary situations and circumstances, and then, you know, ultimately getting down these paths, there's some oftentimes negative. But, like, they're still kids. You know what I'm saying? They're, like, 14, 15 years old. We say we've given up on them. Then where are we going as a city? You know, like, my thing is, you can look at what we're doing as a social impact work if you want to. But ultimately, in my mind, yeah, it's social impact, but it's also, like, economic work, because these people, in terms of, like, these young people we're talking about, are going to take a toll on our system one way or the other, in terms of, you know, prisons, if we're not being, you know, conscious of what's happening with them, or other social avenues, right? Or we can figure out ways to lift them up and get them on a path so they can be contributing members of society ultimately.
People want to get more information about what you're doing, get involved. What's the best way to do that?
ChicagoBeyond.org. Just look us up online.
Do you miss the day-to-day in the school system?
I do not. I still talk to kids regularly. So I was on the phone with a child on Sunday.
Bureaucracy that you have to deal with? That's why you don't miss it?
I think the best part of the job that I would miss would be the young people, right? It's the kids. And so I still talk to them. And so that's the best part of the work, really. And so the fact that I still get to engage with them, but... I don't really miss it in that way. I think now I get to engage not only with them, but I also feel like I'm able to create, like, this impact, right? And when you think about, like, almost $3 million going to these three programs, that's going to change the course of these organizations and ultimately how they can impact kids.
That's a lot. Liz Dozier, working to make Chicago better with her organization, Chicago Beyond. Thank you, Liz, for coming in.
Thank you, Dean.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you, too.
We'll update the news and our big story coming up next on WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You know, just for the heck of it, I went on the internet to see if there really was a company called Bob's Urinal Cakes.
Is there
not. It was a joke on Conan O'Brien. But there's a Wikipedia page explaining what urinal cakes are. Do we need that on Wikipedia, really?
I'm looking it up right now.
I don't think so. And who put the time in to put that together?
Right, that's what I mean. Does somebody think it's actual cake?
Maybe. Not all women know what that is.
Maybe you should explain
now see,
what
I
that
didn't,
is.
Now, see, I didn't even...
That's what I was
I
thinking.
I didn't even think of that, right, because it's such a guy thing.
It is a guy thing.
That in the urinal that hangs on...
In the urinal world.
In the world of urinals, you know, for men, there is a small... it looks like a round disc.
Like,
right?
A sponge.
Like a hockey puck.
Yeah.
Looks like a hockey puck, which is aromatic when the urinal is used for what it's used for.
Which is like a deodorizer, right?
It's very pleasant smelling.
Okay.
But occasionally there's ice.
Occasionally.
There's ice? Are you kidding
ice?
Me?
Ice? What's that for?
Sometimes. You know what? I honestly don't even know that. But
I don't
that's
know.
Very old school. That's very old school urinal where they just dump ice cubes in the urinal.
In addition to the urinal cake?
Well, I don't think you get both.
Okay, just one or the other. This is legit because I don't know a lot of these answers.
I think you get one or the other, but in some places you get the ice. I guess it must have the same effect, right?
Are Larry and Robin going to be joining us anytime soon?
Oh, yeah, we should save this discussion for them.
We will talk urinal cakes.
I'm eating my bagel.
We will talk urine and urinal cakes when we talk to Larry and Robin on TV. They didn't think the conversation could get stupider than it was last hour.
Kale, they want to go back to Kale now.
I enjoy a challenge like that. No, but the cake is the little thing is it's a deodorizer. It's a urinal deodorizer.
Okay. Some people would not know this. I'd say mainly a lot of women might not know this.
You know what? I never even thought of that. That you were probably not up on the latest in urinal.
Would you have been missing something?
Technology.
Urinal chic, as some of us are. And then don't even get us started on the troughs at Wrigley Field, because that's a whole nother urinal discussion. Well, we were going to. The reason why we played that music from The Office about 10 minutes ago was because we had a great conversation with our pal John Krasinski from The Office. But I think, why don't we do the traffic first? And then when we come back from that, we will hear from John Krasinski talking about his new movie, talking about being a dad, talking about his new project that's coming up, in which he will play a John Clancy character on Amazon Prime. It's all coming up after Mary gives us the very latest. So the TV show The Office, you know, started off in the UK with Ricky Gervais. The American version with Steve Carell, a huge hit. Not, you know, made Steve Carell an even bigger star than he is, but also brought us guys like John Krasinski, who played Jim on the show. So great on that show. And I think all of them on that show would have, had the show continued, they all would have stayed on it. But John Krasinski, when the show ended, went on to a pretty successful movie career. He's done little supporting roles in movies like It's Complicated and Leatherheads. He's like a close buddy now with George Clooney. He's like, you know, rolling with the big A-listers.
He's in
now.
That circle with Matt Damon.
He really
Clooney.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fellow Bostonian, Matt Damon. He was in the movie Aloha. Most recently, he was starring in the Benghazi movie, 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, kind of a lead role for him, in which he was really great. And now he's making his directorial debut in a movie that'll open the beginning of September called The Hollers. That's the name of his family. The father, played by the great Richard Jenkins, mother, played by Margot Martindale, one of my favorite actresses.
Love her.
It's the story of the mother has a seizure and is taken to the hospital and has to have brain surgery. So the whole family gathers around. This is about as dysfunctional a family as there can possibly be, you know, and how they deal with each other, but also with this crisis now. And John Krasinski, I think, not only acts in the movie, does a really sweet, loving job directing this film. I can't wait for everybody to see it because I really like the film. I really like John Krasinski. I've interviewed him I don't know how many times. And is just one of the nicest guys that there is. And now expanding his world into directing.
Finally, I got there. Mr. Big Time is what I always wanted to be called.
Is that how you would like us to refer to you from now on?
No way.
Mr. Big Time.
What was that like for you? I mean, taking on this whole thing. I know you've done television before, but significantly different for you and acting at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, directing for me is something I love doing, but I have to find a story that is, undeniable and a story that I feel I have to be the guy to tell it because, let's be honest, there are a whole lot of talented directors out there. This is a movie I was attached to as an actor a long time ago, 6 or 7 years ago, and I think it was the fastest I've signed on to anything because, to me, I love movies like this. I love movies about family and about the truth about family. And I think we can be honest, there's a whole lot of family movies out there. And so I never wanted to be a part of anything derivative. So I waited for a script like this to come along, which is the most honest take on family I think I've seen in a really long time. Because it shows the complexities of family, but it also shows that that channel of love and potential to be a close family is always there. I just had someone the other day say to me, I love the movie. If I was closer to my mom, I would have called her. And I said, you can still call her. That's the beauty of this. Mm-hmm. And so I think that even that impetus to call his mom was the exact compliment that I've wanted, or not even compliment, the best thing I could ask for from this movie is that you feel that this is your family somehow.
I wonder if it meant something more to you now that you're a dad.
100%. My daughter was 4.5 months old. When I started shooting this. So had I shot this 5 months before, it would have been a completely different movie. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely understood the idea of a guy at the doorstep of having a baby, for sure. But I think more what it did was add this weight to the movie, in a good way, of sort of this existential pull of what family means. So I understood my parents better. I understood my relationship to my brothers better. I even started thinking about bigger things like the idea of being from a family name, the idea of lineage. Like this stuff is... It's where we're from. It's what defines us. So you have to respect it, love it, and hopefully understand it.
Yeah, it's relatable in so many ways without being schmaltzy, without being depressing.
Thank you.
A lot of times you can come out of family movies
Absolutely.
And just want to kill yourself.
That's right, yeah.
But it really strikes the perfect balance. So, number one, you've got my favorite thing in any movie, a fantastic story. But could you have asked for a better cast?
No.
Oh, my God.
No, unbelievable.
This is like... one of the most stellar ensembles I've
Thank
ever seen
so
in
much.
One movie. Oh, my
yes,
God.
Thank you very much. And I will say that I would love to take credit for that. But I think it is the script. I think Jim Strauss wrote a script that is very real, right? So he navigates through hairpin turns of comedy and drama in a way that nobody else does because that's real life. And what I mean by that is you can't prepare for the bad times and you can't prepare for the good times. Life just happens to you, and Jim understands that. So there's no music swell to get you to the emotional moments, and there's no big wide open spaces to laugh. This movie just keeps going on the way of one of your regular days would be. So to me, I think the cast bonded to that. Usually when you make offers to a cast, they say, yeah, I'll do it, but I don't like this scene. I don't like the ending. I want to change this. And every single person who signed on to this said, I know what this is. I'll do it. And I think everybody did it because they have a connection to their family and they wanted to do this movie. So I was so lucky to have this cast. And speaking to being a director, when you have a cast like this, there's not a whole lot of directing going on. It's just more giving them room, creating a space that they can do
Get
the best
out of their
work.
Way
yeah.
a little,
I mean,
a
Richard
bit.
And Margot are two of the best actors working,
Oh,
period.
My God.
Period.
I mean, what is that quality that they bring to this? You could have hired other mom and dad to you
yes,
characters in
absolutely.
This movie. They bring something that I don't even know how to describe it.
I probably couldn't describe it perfectly either, but I'll try. The idea for
makes
me
for a much more interesting interview when you do.
Exactly,
I appreciate
I
that.
Like, I agree. I don't know how to I'll try and probably fail miserably. But I think Margot would say, oh, it's experience, right? So we're older, we know we've had more acting experiences. I totally disagree. I think that there's been something special about her for a long, long time. And Richard, I think what they understand is that acting is a representation of real life. So they don't overdo it. They don't do showy parts. Like, there's plenty of emotional moments for both Richard and Margot in this movie that any other actor would get and go, oh, this is my moment. This is where I crush the movie.
Right.
And the truth is, they don't look at it like that at all. Mm-hmm. They approached, and I was fascinated to watch it, they approached these emotional scenes by just coming up to it like it hasn't happened yet. So what these big emotional things are that are going to happen, I just have to live through it. And it was so beautiful to watch these restrained, which I find more powerful, the more restrained, these restrained, beautifully articulated performances.
Yeah, less is more. I mean, truly.
Exactly, yes.
It's the that applies to the story and to those performances. You're great. in it. But your head is completely swollen now as,
totally,
you know, Mr. Director now.
Mr. Big Time Director. Let's not get that wrong.
So I don't want to you know, blow too much at you right now, but it's really, really, really nice.
Thank you very
that,
much.
My favorite kind of movie.
Thank you.
Without a doubt.
I really hope people go see it for that reason. I think people will connect to it.
Yeah, I think so too. What's it like being a dad?
It's, you know, I keep trying to articulate it in a new way, and I now have come to the realization that I can't. All the cliches are true. I mean, it is life-changing. I am a 10 times better person than I was before, or at least I try to be a better person because of it. When the responsibility shifts to this person, so does your perception of the world. Mm-hmm. So I think one of my friends said, you realize when you have kids that you've been selfish your whole life. And I totally get it. I don't think I've watched 4 hours of television with a bag of potato chips in a very long time. And thank God for it, because, you know, I get to relive life through these amazing kids. And and I'm just along for the ride. They are teaching me everything.
Was there something that you weren't prepared for, or something, like one thing that really surprised you?
Yeah, absolutely. And weirdly, it's one of the reasons why I connected so much to this, to the reason of why I wanted to direct it rather than just act in it was... I've always wanted to be a dad. I was never scared about being a dad. I never had that idea of like, oh man, does it change everything? And I was ready for everything to change. I think what I was really surprised by is that no matter, and you know, like as I'm sure you can say, is I'm in a fantasy camp. Like my life is not reality. I've been so lucky to have this existence. And so to have this success, I still had these huge existential questions about, are you the guy that you want to be to raise this girl? It's not about, are you at the place in your life that you want to be? All those selfish questions go away, and you realize I started asking myself huge questions like, are you ready to be the person that this little girl asks all her questions? Are you ready to be that bounce board? And I realized the answer is no, and that's okay. Because one of the best bits of advice my dad ever gave me was, one of the best answers you can have is, I don't know, to your kids. So I'm really excited to continue it, but that was big for me. I thought I was like, oh, I got this father thing, hands down. That was a huge underestimation.
Yeah, has there been like one like really funny moment? One
every single
one that
day
brings a tear to your eye.
Oh, well, that's
got to happen all the time.
I'm a crier. I cry at everything. I cried when she came home from the pottery store with some mangled version of like a alligator or something painted pink and purple, and I was like, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Right, yeah, that's awesome. So what's going to be next now? Are you going to focus more on directing? Balancing act?
The Office was huge for me in every single way because it is and forever will be probably the most important thing I've ever done, the most special thing I've ever done. And so I feel so satisfied by doing something like that. Obviously, it gave me all these huge opportunities, so I owe it to that. But one of the biggest opportunities it gave me was the ability to try new things and try to redirect things. So, you know, 13 hours was a huge change for me, not only for audiences to see me that way, but for me to see myself that way. So, and it was a transformation physically and career-wise. Yeah. And then I think it's opened up the door to try to continue to do new things, try new things. So I'm writing, I'm directing, and I'm producing. But acting-wise, I'm really excited about Jack Ryan. That's next. So I'm taking on that role, which I'm very, very excited. Amazon is doing a show on Jack Ryan. And the funny thing was, the pitch to me from Carlton Cuse was, this actually isn't a TV show at all. We're going to take the Tom Clancy books, the idea of the Tom Clancy books. They'll be based more in the real headlines of today. But the idea is, he said, maybe this 10-part movie that we're going to do every season, it won't be a show, it'll be almost like a movie broken down into 10 parts, is the best way to tell the story, because Clancy's books are so rich and deep, and the character himself, if he has a superpower, it's his intelligence and problem solving. So,
So that's going to be great. That's going to be, John says that they're going to start filming the Jack Ryan series for Amazon in January, so we'll look forward to that. But this movie, The Hollers, I'm going to give it a, you know, rave reviews when it opens September 2nd here in Chicago. We'll tell you more about that. Quick break, and we'll update a busy, busy morning in news coming up next on WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
All good. My favorite part of the Steve Cochran Show, when that Dean Richards comes on, he is Ian Steve. They're cutoffs.
Oh, they're crazy.
Characters. They're morons, those two.
Being objective about it, I think it's my favorite part of the show, Dave.
And Andrea's drunk.
Objectively speaking.
Oh, mine too.
Best
without
part of
a doubt.
Show.
Hands down.
Hands down.
Dave, yep. Also drunk. The
ratings just shoot way up in the air during
skyrocketing.
This.
Yes. There'll be no entertainment segment today.
No.
Well, not the like we usually do.
Oh, okay.
Because we're going to sync up with WGN-TV, my other job.
Oh, cool.
We're going to sync up with them after the 8:30 news. So we'll have entertainment stories then. And, you know, really, without Steve here, it's difficult to do the entertainment stuff.
Well, you can't, you know, we won't make fun of you, and we won't make fun of us, or maybe you will.
That's the difference.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the difference. So stay tuned. Well, in the next half hour, we'll get to all of that. Our 8 o'clock hour is sponsored by our friends at Wintrust Community Banks, as always. It's a super busy news morning, so much happening overnight. And probably the biggest story of all are earthquakes, as Steve has been reporting, as Andrea has been reporting in our big stories this morning. Earthquakes in Italy and also in Myanmar, Burma. Pretty significant earthquakes, both places. Tom Rivers, ABC News, joining us in London, I believe it is. Tom, good morning. How are you?
We're doing okay, Dean. Yeah, when it rains, it pours. And we're talking about two major quakes, and you're right. 6.8 Myanmar in the central part of the country, and it's difficult to get reports out of there. We will get reports later in the day, but the one closer to me, Amatrice, central Italy, beautiful, beautiful mountainous area, village of about 2,700 people, rocked about 3:30 in the morning there, 6.2 shallow quake. Officially, they're standing by the number 38 known dead, but in stories like this, we know it's going to be rising, and the local reports say you're talking more in the neighborhood, probably 50s or maybe 60s at this stage of the game.
The video footage of the devastation that the quake has left in its wake is horrible to look at. It's horrifying. I mean, it's 6.2, is certainly quite a quake, but it seems like it produced more damage than you might expect from a quake of that magnitude.
Yeah, well, you're looking at buildings that are gorgeous, hundreds of years old, literally. And the standards weren't the standards of today. And a big rubble pile in some corners of the village. Some buildings still standing, severely cracked, et cetera, but others really have fallen into a heap. And the Italian rescue and search crews are probably one of the best in the world. They're out there with the sniffer dogs. They know time is of the essence. They really have to work hard right here, right now, sleep in 3 days. Forget about it. Because they're taking care of business right now, because that is the golden window right now. If people are in pockets, they got to get to them quick.
Yeah. Is this an area, do we know, that is prone to seismic activity?
Yeah, certainly so. Many, many tremors throughout the year. Thankfully, most of them are just pretty inconsequential. But the last big one, 2009, in that region, a few hundred people died.
Tom, there was a report that one of the hospitals where some of the people were being treated, especially in this mountainous region, part of the hospital was destroyed. So they were treating people outside in the courtyard or outside in the front of the hospital.
You end up triaging people in situations like this. And as I say, they responded very, very quickly. They had some medevacs up there for the more seriously injured. Some of our people now that are there say they've seen walking wounded, you know, heading out of town and trying to get help along the way. So it's filling in all of the above. And, of course, a lot of these people have nowhere to go to tonight. Many of them, thankfully, may have relatives, friends in the nearby area. But they're going to have to get something up there. They're going to have to get tents up there and basic food supplies, et cetera, at least to get the people through the next couple of days and weeks.
Tom, what else can you tell us about other areas that may have been affected? Because we heard that this quake was even felt in Rome, much more populated area. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, it was felt. I mean, anecdotally, people, tourists, Brits, Americans that were in hotels in Rome, people were woken up, in their deep slumber, 3:30 in the morning. And for those that come from, say, earthquake areas, California, et cetera, they knew what the score was. Many of them went down to the lobby, went out in the street. Others were just saying, what is this? I've never experienced this. And, yeah, it was felt that far away, it being so shallow.
Any damage in the further regions? Or I don't want to say merely tremors and, you know, merely mm-hmm. feeling it, because it's pretty shocking when that happens.
Yeah, you know, you cast your net wide. Some reports about 50 miles away, Perugia, for instance. People described cracks appearing in buildings there, but the building's still standing. Occasionally, some people said maybe parts of ceilings, suspended ceilings fell, et cetera, et cetera. But not obviously to the extent that we're seeing in the epicenter, which really looks horrific.
Yeah, it looks as though the epicenter of the quake, that Rome, in relation to the epicenter, is just to the, looks like south and east of that area of sort of central Rome. Mostly we've been talking about the earthquake in Italy this morning, but what can you tell us about another earthquake that happened just hours later in Burma?
Yeah, we're still waiting for details. Myanmar, and again, for many, many years, very secretive, but 6.8 on the Richter scale. That might be in a more remote area. And as I say, we haven't got any figures at this stage of the game to really nail down how extensive the damage might be there and really the toll, the human toll as far as that particular quake goes.
Well, we'll keep everybody updated on what's going on. Tom, we appreciate your update and all the very latest as always. Thank you so much.
Take care, guys.
Tom Rivers reporting to us live from London this morning on what's going on. As we were talking about earlier, can't even imagine, you know, you're sleeping and you begin to feel the ground shaking beneath you, under your feet, and how terrifying that must be. I wonder, I wouldn't mind opening up the phone lines just to kind of get a sense for people who have been through quakes, what that's like. I wouldn't know what to do. No. If something, if, you know, I'm in California all the time. If something ever happened, I would have absolutely no idea what to do in a case like that.
Same way, because remember when we were kids and there would be tornado warnings, you'd have the drills in class, you know, you'd go under, you know, under the desk or into, you know, a different room.
Right.
I wouldn't know either what to do.
No idea. 312-981-7200. Have you been through a quake? What's it like? What's your initial reaction? But what do you... help a Midwest brother out a little bit here. What do you do? 312-981-7200. 823.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. While we appreciate the irony of this song for the earthquakes.
We're just honoring Carole King.
I'm not sure. If I was in California and an earthquake happened, I'm not sure that I would say to myself, well, I would like to hear that Carole King song right now. I don't even, we were talking about this during the break, Andrea and Dave and I. What do you do during an earthquake? Dave said, don't you get in a bathtub? And I think we said we think that's tornado.
Tornado, maybe?
We think that's tornado. Oh. We're disaster stupid.
Oh, we're done. God forbid.
The three of us are dead if anything
right,
happens.
If an earthquake hits the studio right now, we're done. We don't even know what to do.
And you said, Dean, what about a Sharknado?
Well,
what do you do?
I think we've learned from those four movies, there is no escaping.
You can't run.
If a Sharknado happens, just say your prayers.
We've learned from Ian Ziering.
Here is Kathy on WGN. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
So, Kathy, you were in a quake in Peru, it says here, huh?
I was. This was in 1986, I think. And I had gone with a group to go to Machu Picchu. And we were in a city called Cusco, which you take the train from there to Machu Picchu. We had flown all night, and we landed about 6 o'clock in the morning, and so we went to sleep for a few hours, got up, had lunch, and just as I was leaving the lunch table, the entire hotel started shaking violently.
Oh, my gosh. What was what was your first initial reaction?
Awe. I think I was just awestruck. I couldn't believe it.
Did you realize what was happening? Because it would take me 5 minutes to even figure out, you know, what was going on.
Yes, I think I went, this must be an earthquake. But this hotel was an older hotel, and the dining room was right next to the lobby, and there was a huge plate glass window looking out on the street. And as I looked at that window, I thought, that thing is going to shatter all over us.
Right.
So I bolted for the front door to get out to the street and ran down the steps of the front, hotel and just got into the street in front of the hotel on my hands and knees.
Yeah, wow.
And all the people, everybody else was fleeing from the hotel, and we were all in the street on our hands and knees, and it was heaving, just heaving like a ride at an amusement park. And as I was on my hands and knees, I would go back and forth between euphoria, thinking this is the most amazing experience I've ever had, and then sheer terror.
Right.
That the building, this brick building, was going to collapse on the street, or that a hole was going to open up and just swallow us.
Swallow us into the earth, yeah. I
just went back and forth between these two extreme emotions.
Yeah.
And we later learned that it was a 7.8 or 9,
I think.
Oh, that's huge. Massive, massive.
So it was a massive earthquake.
Yeah.
And when we went back into the hotel, big chunks of plaster had fallen from the ceilings, were lying in our beds. All the plaster around the door jams and the doors was all broken, but the structure of the hotel had held, but the plaster and of course we couldn't get on the elevators.
Yeah, can't imagine. Kathy, thank you very much. Dave, how about you? What was your experience?
Well, mine wasn't quite as colorful as that one, the hard act to follow. It wasn't as remote, but I was working a corporate meeting in San Diego. I'm like you, a Midwestern boy, and don't feel them here as much. And we had just gotten in the night before. They had on the news, what do you do when there is an earthquake? And they spoke about getting in between, if you can't get to somewhere even safer, getting between the door, you know, in a door frame, because that's where it's more solid.
Hmm.
And so in the middle of the night, heard what sounded actually like a freight train, and the epicenter was between San Diego and Palm Springs, and started shaking, and so I jumped up and got into the door frame. It didn't last that long. We all got out then, and we checked since we were the crew, and we had to check. We had a big tent set up for the meetings and for some of the functions, so there was some damage there to the lights and some other fixtures hanging there. But fortunately, there wasn't a lot of damage, and nobody was injured.
Well, I'm glad that worked out okay. Now, see, we've learned, I guess, door frame. I would be afraid that it would collapse on me.
Do you remember, of course you do, the movie Twister with... Now, I know that's a twister,
everything I know about disaster, I know from movies.
From film, right? Remember Helen Hunt? I know it was a twister, but everything blew away except the door frame and the pole that they were chained to.
Oh, that's right.
Everything ended happily and they kissed. Oh, wait, that's not real life. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't go in high rises because of the disaster movie...
Towering Inferno.
Oh, remember that?
When I go into a high rise, I think, how am I going to get out of this building if something happens?
You look for the sprinklers, make sure that they're
there. One of the Die Hard movies. I think Die Hard,
or
the
Die
first
Hard.
Die Hard.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly right. Dave, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break, update the news. Big story this morning, the earthquakes. Will continue with all the latest information on that next on WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
With Uncle Dean today. Steve's got a couple of days off. Happy to be filling in today. We're going to sync up with WGN Television in a few minutes here. I'll give you my morning entertainment report. But before we get to that, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about something cool that's going on in the Chicago area that our friends with Broadway in Chicago have been involved in, the 6th Annual Illinois High School Musical Theater Awards. Maggie McNamara is the Director of Marketing with it all. Good morning. Nice to have you here with us.
Good morning. Thrilled to be here.
So explain what the Illinois High School Musical Awards are, Theater Awards.
The program celebrates excellence in high school musical theater throughout our state.
So we send representatives to out to the schools all over our state to evaluate and view the high school musical theater productions.
That's almost as good a gig as I have. Going around and watching movies and plays all the time, getting out to watch some of these musicals. And on the high school level, these high school students, these schools are doing amazing jobs with the productions that they're putting on.
Yes, there are truly amazing things going on in high schools throughout our state, and it's been a joy to get to see them.
So the application process for the next round has just started, right?
Yes, our applications for this year go up at 10 a.m. today for the schools to fill out and apply.
Okay, and is that open to all schools, all drama departments? Who is eligible to participate
Correct.
In this?
We are inviting all public and high school schools to apply to be part of our program.
Okay, and talk to me about last year's, or the, I should say this year's, the 2016 recipients of all of this. We've had some pretty great representation this year, haven't we?
Certainly. This year we had Jack Kehalemi from Park Ridge and Cecilia Tripedi from Orland Park. And Cecilia came home with the Best Dancer Award from the Jimmy Awards in New York City.
And from which productions?
Cecilia was in My Fair Lady, and Jack was in Big Fish.
There's some tough talent there. You know, Orland Park really churns out a lot of famous actors and actresses. Okay, well, not a ton, but they will. They will soon. And we're starting right now.
There, I hear from theater programs, drama programs all the time, looking to tell me about what they're doing. And I try to catch productions whenever I can. I'm always completely blown away by how aggressive these, how professional these programs are. When I was in high school and you go to a play, you know, it was like, you know, dopey and dopier, you know, putting on productions. The kids today are incredibly sophisticated, mm-hmm. incredibly talented. Mm-hmm. I think it's a real honor for them, but also for all of the faculty that put this together. Don't you think that's an important part of this?
It's certainly an important part to celebrate the great work that's being done in these high schools.
Okay, so how do people apply? How do they get involved with this?
Yes. So all of our information can be found at BroadwayInChicago.com, as well as on our Facebook page. And the school application, as I said, will open at 10 a.m. So if you're a school, high school director, teacher in Illinois, and you'd like your program to be considered, we'd love to have you apply.
Okay.
A teacher has to nominate you, though, right? You can't.
Correct.
A student
the school
nominate.
Has to fill out the application.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, teachers, get to it. Maggie McNamara, Director of Marketing, Broadway in Chicago. And the 6th Annual Illinois High School Musical Theater Awards applications just became available the other day. If you go to BroadwayInChicago.com, you can find the links to take you there. Thank you for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
It is 8:49 on 720 WGN. We're hearing Paul Conrad on the WGN TV Morning News, delivering the weather forecast. Paul, I don't know if you know, guys know, Paul delivers the weather like every 2 minutes.
This morning. Hey, Dean.
Hey, you guys. Good morning. Yeah, we're here on WGN Radio. I'm filling in for Steve Cochran today, and covering the big serious stories of the day, like you guys, the earthquakes going on, and some of the lighter things. We just had an interview with John Krasinski, Jim from The Office, and I've got a couple of entertainment headlines like we always have for you guys this morning, including a story about Jennifer Lawrence, who again has been named the highest paid actress second year in a row, making $46 million last year. Forbes said that Lawrence grabbed a big chunk of that box office gross from her last two Hunger Game movies. Chicago's own Melissa McCarthy in the number two spot, $33 million. I'm going to say that's a pretty good take for somebody from, coming from Plainfield, Illinois. John Legend also in the buzz this morning, developing a new TV series that's called Black Wall Street. The Oscar and Grammy winner is developing a new television series titled Black Wall Street for WGN America, our national cable channel. It's set in Tulsa, Oklahoma, at the beginning of the 20th century. The series will follow the black middle class that built the community. If it's picked up, it is expected to air in 2018. And also the movie The Departed is set to become a television series on Amazon. They're developing the series, an hour-long drama that will center on a young police officer who goes undercover to infiltrate a ruthless Latino gang. The gang has its own spy in the police department show. The show will be set in Chicago. And speaking of Chicago, that is where the film Southside With You is centered. It's a movie that will open on Friday. This is the movie that I've been telling you about, that is about the very first date between a young law clerk by the name of Barack Obama and his supervisor, then Michelle Robinson. The movie is just about their very first date. They were in Chicago last week, and I had an opportunity to sit and talk with them a little bit about their role, but also doing these very recognizable Obama voices.
It's more like a very deep, older Obama.
Do you fall into it sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I think you a little bit.
Yeah.
To shake Michelle off into the...
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, Michelle also has a very distinctive speech, like the way she talks.
Right.
And Richard also wanted me to, you know, we got a dialect coach for me. And, you know, I didn't want to do a, like, heavy... imitation
like
or
a cartoon, right?
Yeah, I didn't want it to be a caricature. I wanted it to, you heard Michelle the way it's kind of like a song.
Although I would think that would come in handy if you're at a McDonald's drive thru or something. Speaking of doing your Barack, ordering a quarter pounder or something.
You got a Big Mac and a side of fries. You still have milkshakes? Actually, I don't like ice cream. So.
I don't know.
Movie is going to open on Friday. I'll have the full review for you on that then. So we've got here on the radio, we've got comedian Tim Meadows, guys coming up in just a little while. Just to give you a sense of the excitement of what we've got going on the radio here this morning over on our text line, people texting in. Our number one topic for this morning has been urinal cakes. So you get a sense. I don't know how this, wow. I don't even know how this came up this morning, but we had to explain to Andrea Darlis what a urinal cake was.
I wouldn't know.
She didn't know what it was, so we explained it. And then we're talking about why do some urinals have ice in them, and what does the ice do?
Wow.
So that has been, I mean, we're covering all the serious stuff today as well.
Yeah, you're keeping AM radio alive there.
That's right. I am bringing the morning news
there
legacy to AM radio.
I don't
here.
Think we've ever had more texts than this morning.
Yeah.
There you go.
Reach it, Dean. You keep it going. We'll check in later.
Bring it. There's Robin Baumgarten and Larry Potash. We have to get back to our urinal talk. We have urinal cake talk. We've got much more coming up after a... do we have a break? Is that what we have here now? Yeah, let's do that. And we'll be back with more next on WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Welcome to the ladies' man. The love line with all the right responses to your romantic queries. I'm Leon Phelps. How y'all doing? I'm doing all right. I got my Cavathier right here. Yeah, you got the ladies' man. Now, what's your query?
Valentine's Day has always been so special for my wife and I, but I must say it's getting harder and harder to think of that really romantic gift.
Yeah, well, a bottle of champagne is always really good. And if you don't have $10 to buy a fancy bottle of champagne, you can always make your own fine champagne with just a box of white wine and some soda water.
Great stuff. Tim Meadows, Saturday Night Live, the ladies' man. Tim, one of the featured cast members on SNL, 1991 to 2000, seems like yesterday. You see Tim in so many motion pictures and television shows, and he joins us on the phone line right now. Tim, good morning, Ballin.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm here in Chicago. It's raining, which is a drag.
Well, you know, we needed the rain, right? That's how they justify having a crummy rainy day. When you just say, well, you know, we needed it. Really, you know, the farmers need the rain. The rest of us just need it nice and dry so we can walk around.
Yeah, I like it when it's sunny, not when it's rainy.
Exactly, exactly. So what's your reaction, Tim, when you hear ladies, man? People must talk to you all the time. Some of your characters from SNL are just, you know, some of the most longstanding on that show. What's your reaction when you hear stuff like that?
It's nice. I mean, I'm happy that I made an inroad, you know, into people's lives. I mean, it's sort of nice that it's something that people, it makes them laugh and they enjoy the character. They enjoy doing it for their friends. That's what I hear a lot is people will go, me and my friend, we used to do Ladies Man and like do jokes from your sketches to each other when we were growing up. And I kind of feel like it's a compliment.
Yeah, I would think that that would have to be a super high compliment for, you know, any performer to know that people are, you know, mimicking some of their characters and some of the lines from that.
And yeah, it's always funny when like a guy will come up to me and say that he always watches the movie and he'll go, yeah, my girlfriend here, she, you know, I have to make her watch it with me. And then the girlfriend is always like, yeah, I've seen your stupid movie.
A completely different level of enthusiasm.
yeah, exactly.
That's funny. So you've got a new series that's going to be premiering September 11th. That's called Son mm-hmm. of Zorn. This sounds like a really interesting, really original kind of concept. Tell us a little about that.
Well, it's a hybrid show. It's animated and real life action characters. And it's about a father who is an animated character who lives in this country called Zephyria that's all animated. And he returns to Orange County to reconnect with his son and his ex-wife, and he finds a job working in an office in Orange County. And so and I played the fiance of his ex-wife. He finds out that she's getting married again to my character, who is like a psychologist teacher. So I'm not a barbarian at all, you know. So that's what the show is about. It's sort of like a family show. It's about, you know, sort of modern families and divorce. It's about a lot of different things.
Oh, so a little more straightaway treatment of it all. I think after, you know, this motion picture that came out a couple of weeks ago, Sausage Party, you know, it seems like the trend is going to be R-rated comedy, you know, like naughty comedy seems to be mm-hmm. the hottest thing right now, don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for like I don't know. This is not like Sausage Party, though, even though it is a little edgier because it's sort of cartoon violence. And but it's more like about it's more like a show about a family and divorce, I think, than anything else.
Okay. So, I mean, really, the hybrid live-action animated concept, just that all by itself is, you know, sounds really interesting. And the whole concept of what the storyline is about, with Jason Sudeikis, right, as one of your voices in this.
Yeah, Jason is the voice of Zorn. And he's really funny. And, you know, it's like, this, like talking about the show is like, it's such, for me, it's hard to like explain to people what it's about. I always tell my friends like to look at the YouTube clip of the show, because that's the best way to describe what the show is, you know, because it's strange. It really is like, it's different. And I think once you start watching it, it takes like 5 minutes before you totally get it and buy into it.
Yeah, it's always better.
These people can actually... Mm-hmm.
I was going to say it's always better to watch, especially comedy, than have somebody try to intellectualize it and explain it. It's never quite as funny when you're talking about like a synopsis of something than actually seeing what it's about.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm trying to explain to my kids. Like when they try to tell me like jokes that they've seen on TV or funny things, I go, you know, I'm sure it was funny when it happened, but like, your description of it does not make it sound that funny.
Right. Yeah, the explanations never work that way. So this is going to premiere September 11th, Sunday, September 11th. Where will we be seeing this?
This is on Fox. On Fox. So it'll be all over the place.
Okay.
We follow this. I think we come on after The Simpsons.
Oh, very good. Very good. That's a nice spot to be in. That's a fantastic spot to be in.
Yeah, definitely.
So I wonder for actors, I've asked, you know, guys like Will Ferrell and Tina Fey and, you know, a lot of the ex-SNLers, you know, this time of year getting ready, season premiere is going to be coming up. Do you miss being in that daily grind, the weekly anxiety, the weekly excitement putting on a live show every week?
No, I think the further away you are from it, the less you feel like, you know, any kind of anxiety or connection to the show. But my first year away, I couldn't even watch it, because the first night I watched the show without me on it, it was like watching somebody date your girlfriend or something. It's like, I didn't like the feeling, and I was like, this is just not fun. So I stopped watching it. And then after a couple of years, I would occasionally tune in and watch it. And now, I probably watch it every week, you know, but I'm like a fan again. So it's kind of cool, because I'm interested to see what are their takes on things that happen during the week, and, you know, who has a new character or who has a funny sketch, you know, this week. It's a lot more.
Yeah. Can you relate to the pressure that they must be going through, you know, and the difficulties of putting on a show like that? I mean, is part of what's going on in your mind, oh, I'll bet Lauren didn't like this, or I'll bet this is going on right now, you know, because you have the benefit of behind the scenes.
Yeah, a little. I mean, sometimes I can guess. I think like, oh, they probably had to do this character, this sketch because this is a character that they're trying to develop, and so this is not the stronger outing for this character. The first one is usually the best one, and then you have to sort of find the catchphrases and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I can sense that stuff, but I kind of feel like it's different now. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's like, to me, it's like a high, it's like a finely tuned race car, you know. It's all of these things that come along with doing SNL now. And when we were on it, it was more like a Chevy Impala or something. It was like a nice car, but, you know, it got the job done. And it feels like now the show is much more aware of itself and knows the performers on the show are like seasoned performers. They're not like people who are just getting their first shot on a television show, you know?
So besides Son of Zorn, that'll be premiering September 11th, Tim, what else do you have going on?
I have taken 2 months off because I was working so hard on Zorn. So the summer I took time off. And I'm going back to work. I do stand-up, and I toured doing stand-up the majority of the year. And then after that, I'm going to do some episodes of The Goldbergs on ABC.
Oh, yeah.
I'm shooting that next week. I think I'm signed up to do maybe 4 episodes of that.
No, that's great. That's great. With our pal and another Chicagoan in there, Jeff Garland.
Jeff Garland, the big grand poobah.
The big grand poobah, exactly. Well, we're going to be poobahing yourself here with your new series, Son of Zorn, that'll premiere Sunday, September 11th, 7:30 Chicago time on Fox. Tim Meadows, nice to talk to you, man. I hope you have a great little time off before you get back to work. Thank you for joining us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Talk to you soon. It's 921 WGN. 925, it's Dean Richards in for Steve Cochran today on WGN. Now, you guys will be filling in for Steve tomorrow morning, is that correct?
We will.
That is correct. I can tell you what we're not talking about.
I can tell you what we are talking about.
Let's find out from both of you what we will and will not be hearing tomorrow.
Dave thinks no urinal cakes.
Yep, no urinal cakes tomorrow.
I'm telling you what, Dave, you may feel like that right now, but so far it's the number one trending topic on our text line.
Yeah.
Okay,
Who am I to judge the public's sentiment for a throwaway comment that we had earlier on the program that has become the number one topic on the show today?
Okay, I stand correct.
That's all I'm saying.
Just
so
giving the people what they want.
That's right. What will you be having on the program tomorrow?
We're going to talk a lot of politics tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Pat Brady and Eric Adelstein, Rick Pearson in to delve into a little bit of Trump and Hillary. I know.
Well,
surprising. I know.
Can we talk? I don't want to get into like a lot of political bashing. It's been such a pleasant program so far today.
Yeah.
But
We do have to talk about Donald Trump. I saw his new campaign manager, Anderson Cooper, interviewed.
I guess she made the rounds yesterday. Yeah, Kellyanne Conway.
And she is something that we have not seen from the Trump campaign before. She's measured. She seems reasonable.
I thought you were going to say a woman.
It was a very interesting conversation where sometimes she just said, well, you know, I'll have to talk to Donald Trump. You know, when Anderson Cooper was asking her about inconsistencies and the possibility of flip-flopping on positions, primarily on immigration,
right,
which has become the big topic, you know, she said that, she was making logical responses to things, which was
not an easy thing to do,
but a really interesting shift in the way it seems that she's going to be running the campaign compared to the way that it ran in the past.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, Paul Manafort came under fire almost immediately. She's taken a little bit of criticism, but yeah, I mean, look what she has to work with. You know, there's just what she has to do is a lot of damage control, Dean. I mean, even this morning, too, Trump made a claim yesterday that 58% of black youths are unemployed. Okay, that's not true. So she has to take, I'm just citing this because it's the newest, you know, I guess, controversy in the Trump campaign. So she has to take that and just say, you know what, he misspoke, he didn't have the numbers, or kind of put a spin on it. Again, doing damage control. Yeah, so she's got a big job.
It was very interesting. I mean, it was completely different than the way we've seen Donald Trump represented by his people
in the past.
Prior to that. Yeah. That said, Donald apparently was being Donald again, and this time talking about the city of Chicago. He made the statement yesterday that's so preposterous, and I'm happy to open up the phone lines, you know, for people to present views other than my own on this, where he said that if he was president, he would need 1 week to get the problem of violence and murders solved in the city of Chicago. It's all it would take. 1 week. That's it. Fixed. Done. Because what he said was that he met a top officer in Chicago who could stop the horror and fix what's going on in a week. He said that he knows officers in Chicago who could put an end to the violence if they were given the authority to do it. And we hear these stories every single day.
Every day.
In much more depth than Donald Trump apparently is hearing.
Mm-hmm.
If I was his campaign manager, I would tell him, you know, do you even know what you're saying?
No,
do you even understand what the problems are?
How many times has he been to Chicago in an inner city neighborhood? I'm not talking opening at the Trump Tower or to come for an event at Trump Tower. In an inner city neighborhood, in Englewood, in South Austin, in East Garfield Park, areas that we are every single day or every single weekend, I've never seen him meet with families or heard about it. Because don't you think that would be a photo op? Hey, you know what? I've met with very top police. Who?
Apparently not grammar police.
Yeah. Very top police.
Number one, I mean, the problem of violence in Chicago is so complex. And to think, like, what are you going to do? Unleash the police to do what? That trivializes how complex this problem is.
Right.
But that said, a spokesman for the Chicago police, Frank Giancarlo, said in a statement, "We have discredited this claim that was made months ago. No one in senior command at the Chicago Police Department has ever met Donald Trump nor a member of his campaign."
Right.
So, I mean, that's an issue there as well. On one hand, you have the campaign manager talking in more rational, reasonable tones.
Right.
And on the other hand, you have this wild claim that is, at least according to the CPD spokesperson, isn't even true, and is an insult to the people who are killed on the streets of Chicago. It's a complex problem.
Yeah, an insult to people who are out there, men and women of the Chicago Police Department and the state police, all of our law enforcement officials who are out there every single day trying to solve this problem. And if you say you have the solution to do it in a week, how about be a human being and say, hey, I have the solution that's going to help you. Not I'm going to wait till I'm president, which I don't think he has the solution anyway. But if you have the solution, how about, hey, let's try this. Trying to help your city.
It shocked me when I heard that yesterday. Somebody wants to, you know, comment, have a different point of view. I don't mean to make this a one-sided argument. You're more than welcome to share your views. I'm really kind of curious of, you know, there. It's clearly a new Donald Trump that we've gotten the last couple of weeks, completely different. And I'm wondering how some of you Donald Trump supporters right now are loving your guy, who is not, you know, he unashamedly wants to build the walls and ban this group and do this and do that and all the things that swept him through the Republican primary season. He's a different guy now. Do you still like him as much? 312-981-7200. Get a quick, are we doing a break first? And then we'll get an update of news next on WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I know police in Chicago. If they were given the authority to do it, they would get it done.
How?
You have unbelievable. How? By being very much tougher than they are right now. They're right now not tough. I mean, I could tell you this very long and quite boring story, but when I was in Chicago, I got to meet a couple of very top police. I said, how do you stop this? How do you stop this? If you were put in charge to a specific person, do you think you could stop it? He said, Mr. Trump, I'd be able to stop it in 1 week. We could stop much of this.
But he didn't tell you exactly precisely how. Because
no, and I didn't ask him because I'm not the mayor of Chicago. But I tell you what, I sent his name in and I said, you probably should hire this guy because you have, you know the expression, you have nothing to lose?
Chicago Police Department spokesperson, according to sources in a statement, said no one in senior command at the Chicago Police Department has ever met with Donald Trump or a member of his campaign. But let's just say that somebody, you know, did talk to him and they just don't want to say publicly that they were talking to Donald Trump. What do you mean Chicago police being more aggressive? What do you mean that the Chicago police are not doing enough? Good Lord, doesn't that, to me, that screams you have no idea what you're talking about and the extent of the complexity of the problem of violence in Chicago. That's what I'm saying about this. I don't want to make this one-sided, though. Happy to hear your thoughts, too. 312-981-7200. If you agree with him, would love to hear from it. Really, mostly what I want to hear, I'm fascinated by this new Donald Trump light that's come out. I mean, it's like a new version of Coke that has come out, and suddenly he is everything that the Republican voters who gave him the nomination is not. He's not the guy who everybody was supporting. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, if you're a Donald Trump fan, how do you like the new guy? How do you like your new guy who's changing his position on the many of the very important issues? Does it change the way that you feel? I'm wondering, if I'm a Donald Trump fan, I'm not. I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm not, and that's why I want to open this up to keep this as balanced as possible. But if I was somebody who followed Donald Trump, listened to what he said, watched the rallies, listened to his speeches, and I made a decision, hey, I like that guy, and now I'm seeing somebody completely different, do I feel betrayed?
Right. Do you still support him? Right.
Do I still feel the same way? A lot of his premise in the beginning is I'm different from all the other politicians, and now it seems like he's not so different from the other politicians. But that's just coming from somebody who's not a supporter. So I'd like to hear from some of you who are. 312-981-7200. Brian, hi. You're on WGN.
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
So I have a little problem with what you were saying earlier. You're putting words in the Trump's mouth. You said that he said he could clean up the crime issue in Chicago in a week. And that's exactly not what he said. You just played the clip just a few seconds ago. He said an officer told him that the officer could clean it up in a week if he was, you know, given the opportunity to. So, I mean, if you're going to report on something, at least do your job and report it accurately.
Well, hang on. We're gonna have a conversation, by the way, Brian. I'm not gonna give a speech, and neither are you. We're gonna talk courteously and politely to each other. Is that all right with you?
Works for me.
Okay, perfect. Because what wasn't he? I felt like he was implying that's what he would do if he was the president. Because otherwise, why would you bring it up in a conversation?
So because you feel he implies something, you feel that it's your duty to change what he said and actually change the words? No,
I don't think I changed it. He told Bill O'Reilly that that's what he meant, and if he was president, that's what he would do.
Well, again, I just listened to the clip. That's not what he said. He said the officer told me clean up in a week. He didn't say I can clean it up in a week, and I'm going to withhold that information until I'm president, like your partner over there had said. I mean, all I'm saying is if you're going to report on something, at least report it accurately.
Okay, I thought we did report it accurately, but we disagree on that. Okay.
Okay, well, you can review your tape, I suppose.
I hear what you're saying. I know what I said, and we just disagree on this, Brian. We can disagree. I think we did report this completely accurately. You don't. So, you know, there we go.
Okay. So as far as the CPD saying, oh, well, no one ever spoke with Trump, you know, well, I can guarantee you that probably someone off the record said exactly what Trump said that person had said. I've spoken with people off the record, for example, about that Laquan McDonald thing. I know an officer said, you know what, that guy was in the lockup every other night. The guy was always drugged out of his mind. It's really not a big loss. Do you think the CPD would ever admit that that was ever said to me? Heck no. You know, so just because they refuse to admit something doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Okay, so my
main complaint was your inaccuracy of reporting.
Okay, it wasn't inaccurate. You can keep saying that as many times as you like. It was not inaccurate. And what was accurate was a CPD spokesman saying no one in senior command ever met with Donald Trump. So,
right, and of course they're never going to admit that.
Okay.
But, however, back to my first point, what you said in the first half of your segment there is you said Trump said he could clean it up in a week. That is inaccurate because what was said was he said that an officer told him he could clean it up in a week.
I don't know why a political candidate would bring it up unless that's what he implied, that if he were president, that's what he would get done. Brian, we can go around.
That's fine, but at least clarify that. If you say, you know what?
Well, I think we did about six times, Brian. I don't know how many.
Now I'm happy. So.
Okay. Just want to make you happy, Brian. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Hi, Charlie. You're on WGN. Welcome to the Happiness Hour. See, I try to open up the phone lines to give people an opportunity to express their opinions, and it has to get so nasty and confrontational. Express your opinion, please. But if you can't be polite, save it for another radio station. I really just want to have some polite dialogue. That's all. Charlie, go ahead.
I'm very polite, Dean, and thank you for taking my call. I'm a big fan of every one of your shows except for Crazy the Frying Pan on Friday night. I'm like, that's so ridiculous. But anyway, no, I'm not a Donald Trump fan, but I'm not a Donald Trump basher, and people don't realize that what he says is he always contradicts himself. And this thing about talking to a police officer is very strange, and you can't find anybody that will back up the story. And the guy that called in earlier, it was just like, wow to me. You know, I'm like, he said it. Why don't you believe what he said? It's like it's very odd, and I think that, you know, Donald Trump seems to have this thing where he thinks he can pull in 300 or 400 mercenaries and just kill all the gang members. I don't know what he's doing. It's just a very oddity what he says. I mean, the political system is kind of hard because you don't really have a lot of people to actually vote for. But the two lessers of the evil, you know what I'm saying, Dean? I don't know. I'm just trying to.
A lot of people feel that way. That, you know, they don't like one, they don't like the other. And that's exactly the quandary that a lot of people are in. I just don't know why you would bring up a statement like a Chicago police officer told them they could stop the horror of what's going on if they were given the authority. If you're running for president, that implies that you would give that person the authority to do it.
Right.
I think that's exactly what he was meant. And then when pushed by Bill O'Reilly, what would that be? What would that be? What would that be? No details.
Kind of a comedian. I'm kind of a comedian at heart. Maybe talking to Officer Dibble and Top Cat in the alley, because the strange things he says, nobody can back up his stories. And it's like, if you can't back up a story, how do I know it's the truth?
Seems like you would give details if you make a statement like that. I appreciate your call, Charlie. Hey, Stephen, you're on WGN.
Hey, I'm going to have a polite conversation, too. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure. Thank you for calling.
Hey, my point is I'm like the other guy. I'm not a big Trump guy. I mean, I'm kind of in the middle. I'm not going to vote for Hillary, so it'll either be Trump or it'll be a third party. But I don't see the present-day president speaking out at all. I see him going, he doesn't even come back to Chicago. He goes on vacation to Martha's Vineyard or Hawaii. I can ask you, how does that make you feel?
Well, I mean, presidents go on vacation. I mean, George Bush went on vacation during, you know, the wars that were going on there. That doesn't bother me. The vacations part doesn't bother me as much as we do have, just to answer your question, the part that I am concerned with, and this is with all politicians, this isn't just the president or anybody else, this goes with the politicians in Springfield, especially the politicians in Springfield. How dare you go on vacation and recess with the financial state that Illinois is in right now? How dare you say, well, we'll see you in 2 months after summer vacation's over, when this state is in financial ruin? So when there are problems like that, and you're an elected leader, whoever you are, do your work done. Get your work done before you dare go on vacation.
And I agree with you on that. But you know what? You got to hold the people of Illinois responsible for that. Because look at the people they put in there time after time after time again. They do not hold them responsible. They don't. They don't. Madigan's been there for how long? 1970?
489 years he's been there, yeah.
I know. So you get the government you deserve after a while, do you not?
True. That's very true. You know, a lot of the blame, we want to blame somebody. We should blame ourselves for who we're voting for. And even worse than that, people who do not vote and do not participate in the project. Steve, I appreciate your call.
We both agree on that one. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for your courtesy. I appreciate it. 956 WGN.